Welcome to Pap Talk, a podcast from Contemporary OBGYN, where we deliver expert insight, commentary, and more on emerging topics and trends to doctors in women's health.
I'm Katie Huffling. I'm the Executive Director of the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments, and we're the only national nursing organization who focuses primarily on the intersection of health and the environment. And I'm also a nurse midwife, and my interest in environmental health was really born from a greater recognition of how the environment can impact reproductive health. So it kind of has been woven throughout my career as a nurse midwife. No matter what area of healthcare you're in and, you know, what your profession is, whether you're a nurse, advanced practice nurse, physician, most of us haven't had very much environmental health education. And so I think it's a really underutilized area of healthcare where we have such an amazing opportunity to help prevent disease and to help our patients have much better outcomes. And if you look at, you know, kind of all of the research pulled together, and the WHO has some really great resources on this. They estimate that around a quarter of all diseases worldwide have some type of environmental component to it. So, you know, when we look at environmental exposures and things that our patients can be exposed to, whether it's at home or at work, you know, just out in the environment, we can have such an amazing impact on their health. Well, I would say right now, one of my main areas of interest is around climate change. And I think that there's a growing consensus that climate change is the most pressing public health issue that we currently face. But conversely, it's also the greatest opportunity because when we address climate change, there's so many different aspects to health that we're able to touch upon. Within climate change, things that are associated with that are things like air pollution, extreme heat, greater areas for vector-borne diseases. You know, there's issues around water, so like flooding and drought, wildfires. You know, there's just so many different components, and depending on, you know, the age of your patient, you know, whether it's a newborn, elderly, people of reproductive age, you know, they have different health impacts depending on both their age, but then also if they have chronic diseases. So for example, with air pollution, we know that when the temperature goes up, the air quality goes down. So when we're having more high heat days, we're having more poor air quality days. And so patients that have respiratory issues or cardiac issues, if they're outside on these poor air quality days or don't have access to quality or, you know, good indoor air quality, you know, they could be more likely to end up in the emergency room having, you know, respiratory issues or cardiac issues. You know, and so I think as health professionals, we have such an, I think we have a moral obligation to both be talking to our patients about ways to reduce exposures. So like using air pollution as an example, there's a tool called airnow.gov where they can sign up and get alerts on their phone or in their email. So the day before a poor air quality day, it'll tell them it's going to be, you know, bad air tomorrow. And here's some things that you need to be doing depending on what type of pre-existing condition you have. But then we also need to be getting involved in advocacy because the climate change is a huge issue. And while individual actions are really important, we really need to be talking with our elected officials and with policymakers and helping them make that connection between health and climate change and how, you know, when they're taking these climate actions, that they're really improving the health of their constituencies. About 15 years ago, the first kind of more comprehensive body burden studies started to be formed where they were testing different body fluids, so like blood, urine, breast milk, for a wide range of industrial chemicals. And the reason that first started around that time was that was when we first had the lab tests that could actually run and be able to evaluate if that was in bodily fluids and in the human body. And so they first did a pilot test on around 15 adults. They found a variety of different chemicals within them in measurable amounts. And then they partnered with the American Red Cross and did cord blood testing on around 20 infants right after birth. And they found around 285 different chemicals within the cord blood right at birth. So this shows that those infants throughout pregnancy, we don't know exactly what times in pregnancy they may have been exposed to these different chemicals, but they were being exposed to measurable amounts of chemicals. And many of these are associated with health impacts like neurological issues such as autism and ADHD, developmental issues, things that we're seeing rising rates of. And so, I don't think it's the whole picture on why some of these different diseases and ailments are rising, but I think it's a component of why we're seeing that. Well, one tool that I talked about in my talk is the Safe Baby Products Guide. And it's a really awesome resource for new parents and parents to be talking about some of the common, more toxic chemicals that may be found in different baby products, whether it's mattresses, strollers and carriers, other products that you might be using with babies. And I think it's really great to help them start thinking about what could be in products so they become more educated consumers, provides some examples of products that are safer. But it also talks about affordability, because one thing that's been really challenging is for a lot of our lower income patients, safer products have been out of reach. And, this is a real environmental justice issue. Like, because of your income or where you live, you shouldn't have only access to more toxic products. And so as part of that guide, we provide guidance on choosing more inexpensive, safer products, where to look for those, and ways that you can maximize, if you have limited funds to be pulling your nursery together. I just think that, when we're seeing patients, especially during pregnancy, it's the perfect time to be able to help them make these positive changes. They want to have the, healthiest pregnancy possible, the healthiest baby possible. And so it's a really opportune time to be doing patient education. So assessing for exposures, talking about things like, personal care products, the products that you're using in your home, like cleaning products, what you're bringing into your home. It's just, I think it's a really great tool for providers to, guide these conversations and help patients start to realize that, unfortunately, we all need to be educated consumers. When I first got into this field, I thought, oh, the government is like making sure that everything that's on the shelf has been tested for safety. And that's totally not true. It's really unfortunate. And so, we can be educated consumers, but also, if a number of people are going to different manufacturers and are saying, we want safer products, we can really guide these industries into producing safer products. And the more that they start producing them, the more the price will come down and access is increased across the board. And, and we've seen it happen, a group of nurses that I worked with several years ago, one of the most popular baby washes that we use in most hospitals had a byproduct of manufacturing. It had formaldehyde and 1,4-dioxane, which are both carcinogens that were in that product. And because of pressure from nurses, we were able to get them to bring the safer formulation that was being used in the European Union quickly to the US and available for use in hospitals and on the store shelves. And that's what's available now. So our voices really do matter.
Thanks for listening to this episode of PAP Talk. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.